How's my financial health, Doc? Welcome to the Financial Literacy Podcast for Healthcare Professionals, where financial security and wealth topics are not a taboo.
Welcome back, everybody, to the How's My Financial Health, Doc? Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed the first podcast on the basics of financial planning. So in that first podcast, we talked a lot about building a foundation, talking about different risk management strategies, including an emergency fund, and also talking about debt repayment. What I really wanted to address with the audience, the healthcare professionals, are the different things that we need to know to properly secure our financial well-being and potentially secure financial wealth as well. So we started off with the basics, talking about echelon one in the pyramid of orders of operation. There was a lot of detail in that first podcast, which lasted close to 45 minutes. I did not realize how long that was. But going forward, the podcast will be much shorter in bite-size time so that people can digest the different topics that we're going to go into. We will take a deeper dive into each topic in future series. But today, I really wanted to talk about things that we do without knowing that we do it because we don't know what we don't know. You know, I commonly hear ignorance is bliss. But in this particular scenario, when it comes to our financial security and well-being, ignorance is not bliss because ignorance has tremendous future impact on our financial well-being. So it is important that we acknowledge that we don't know, also acknowledge that we need to learn, and that we should learn it now. I do not believe that it is any more acceptable to leave our finances to some advisor and leave our control to them without knowing exactly what we are doing. Like when I go see the doctor or when the patients come to see me, it is much easier to deal with an educated patient than a non-educated patient. A well-educated patient is much more adherent to recommendations and therapies than someone who does not understand his or her disease state. And so for physicians, it is exactly the same. When an advisor proposes a recommendation on a purchase, either of an investment or an insurance product, as the consumer, we should understand what we are buying, what our needs are, what are the different nuances of the product before we make a decision. Otherwise, we leave control to the so-called advisors and potentially be making serious mistake that we may not necessarily realize until 10, 15, 20 years later. In today's podcast, we're going to talk about common financial mistakes made by healthcare professionals.
How's my financial health, Doc? Welcome to the Financial Literacy Podcast for healthcare professionals, where financial security and wealth.
I'm going to be diving into topics that is much more basic than what to buy, what investment to buy, what life insurance to buy. This is really not about this. And it's really not about who's the better advisor. Today, what we're going to focus on are the different basic mistakes that we commonly make in our own personal financial life. And this is excluding any investments or products that we're going to be making in our future. And so by understanding these basic mistakes, we will further be able to understand the nuances and the strategies behind the products that we're going to be buying, hopefully with an advisor that will be able to be also aligned with our own strategies and needs. So let's get started. Common financial mistakes made by healthcare professionals. And in fact, I would say most professional. And I would even add on to that, most people in the population. So healthcare professionals are definitely not immune to these mistakes, as these mistakes are made by almost everyone. So it is obvious that in a podcast, I won't talk about every single mistake that we can make financially, but there are top five, and that's what I'll be addressing today. So out of the mistakes that we commonly make, the number one is paying ourselves last. The second mistake is keeping up with the Joneses. The third mistake is life creep and spending more than what we make. The fourth mistake would be not understanding compounded interest, which is a huge, huge topic. And included in this fourth mistake is not understanding opportunity cost. Finally, the fifth mistake that I would say rounds it up is a lack of understanding of risk management. So let's just get started with the number one common mistake, which is paying ourselves last. If you had a chance to read the book by Robert Kiyosaki in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he describes this concept really well. We go to work and make a paycheck. And every month we receive a paycheck. And for that paycheck, we pay everybody else first. So the bank, we have to pay back the mortgage. Electricity, we pay back the government in taxes. We pay back the car loan. And then whatever is left, if there's anything left, then we put it aside. Or we spend it all. If we spend it, we spend it on items that are depreciating assets. And this is why in Robert Kiyosaki's book, he talks about what is an asset and what is a liability. And his concept of asset and liability are very different from what the general population understands. The reason I bring up Robert Kiyosaki's concepts up is because everything that we do and that we pay, we've paid other people first and left nothing for us. So I think it is time that we change this. And there's the concept of paying yourself first. This is not something I invented, obviously. It's something that has been floating for a long, long time. And I first started learning about this concept back in 2002 when I bought a book called The Automatic Millionaire by David Back. What he was really talking about is once we receive our paycheck, the first thing we do is pay ourselves first, meaning automatically put money aside and either save it or invest it. And then the rest is used to pay off expenses, mortgages, hydro bills, water bills, electricity, internet, car loans, and etc. So we pay ourselves first by setting money aside and make it automatic. That is probably the easiest way to do so that there's no thinking involved. It is automatic and intuitive. The way he suggests, and I've seen people do, is once the money comes in through via direct deposit or even via a check, a portion of that money goes automatically into a savings account or into a investment account. And you can decide how much of that should be. It could be 10%, 15%, 20%. Some people go as high as 30% if they think they can manage it. The government has been recommending that we save at least 20 to 30% of our income into a retirement fund so that we can fund a retirement. I'll let you know that in reality, most Canadians cannot achieve even 10%. And that is most Canadians. But as healthcare professionals, I think we can afford to do this the right way if we learn to do this the right way. And I think that most of us should at least set away 20% month after month so that we can fund our retirement. Healthcare professionals is a very broad term. And so for nurses and other professionals who are unionized, they have a pension fund. But for the majority of physicians and dentists, we do not have a pension fund. So everything is self-funded. And so for building a retirement fund and portfolio is of significance. Particularly for physicians, I would say that it is important to be trying to save or invest and keep aside 20 to 30% if possible. So personally, what I've done is that once the direct deposit is made into my bank account, I've directed the bank manager or my bank advisor to take 30% and put it into my direct investment account so that it's properly saved either in a TFSA or in different type of investments. I do not do RRSPs anymore, but that is for a different podcast. So therefore, what is left in my account is 70% of my monthly paycheck, and I try to live within that 70% of the amount. And so therefore, what I've done is automatically paid myself first and then set the other 70% to pay everybody else after. And so this is where this concept of paying yourself comes about. And the way to do it, the most efficient way, is to do it automatically and to set it aside from your bank account the moment it arrives. This way, you won't be able to see the money. And if you don't see the money, you won't be tempted to waste it or spend it on frivolous things that we really don't need. And this brings us to the mistake number two, which is keeping up with the Joneses. And what that really means is just trying to keep up with our neighbor and getting what they are getting and comparing ourselves to them. Our neighbors, our colleagues, may be driving fancy cars, Mercedes-Benz, Ferraris, whatever brand car they are driving. But we really don't know what their financial health and security are. And so if we try to mimic their lifestyle without truly understanding their financial background and their financial security, we really don't know that we are doing the right thing for ourselves based on our own financial status. And therefore, trying to keep up with our colleagues, our neighbors, and buying those fancy stuff and getting the materials that we really don't need, that is not aligned with our financial health, we are very much potentially setting ourselves up for failure in the future because we are spending money on things that we really don't need and don't align with our own either philosophy or even financial planning strategy. The fear of missing out, called FOMO, F-O-M-O, is a very strong peer pressure feature. And so we must guard ourselves against that. And even as professionals, we are peer pressured into doing things that are not necessarily in our best future benefit. And so this peer pressure normally and naturally leads to life creep. And life creep is when we slowly spend more and more and more without us really knowing. As an example, so we buy a house, let's say a house that is 4,000 square feet, because as healthcare professionals, we can. And so we buy this 4,000 square feet house, and now we have to furnish it. But we're furnishing it in a home that is in the neighborhood with other 4,000 square foot houses. And therefore, you know, obviously people will think, I can't buy furniture from IKEA or any of these low-end stores. So people think they have to buy furniture from high-end stores and be really expensive furniture. Because what if one of the neighbors come in and visit? Or what if my other colleague comes and visit and see that I have IKEA furniture? How would that look? And it doesn't stop there. Well, if I have a 4,000 square foot house and a 3-door garage, well, I have to put some cars in front of those garages. What am I going to get? And so when you look around your neighborhood of houses that are 4,000 square feet, they don't have Kias and they don't have Hyundais, do they? Most of the time they have high-end cars. And so fear of missing out will potentially push us into getting these high-end cars as well. Don't underestimate the power of the peer pressure of keeping up with the Joneses. It is really powerful and makes us do things without us really knowing it. Life creep phenomenon is very common in brand new grads because as residents, you make a certain limited salary. But the moment you become staff, then you make a much better salary. And once you make the salary and having lived through painful times and deferred gratification, all of a sudden, this newfound wealth can blind you and give you purchasing power that you've never had before. And so this is the time where it is the residents are most vulnerable to FOMO, keeping up with the Joneses, life creep, and spending more than what you earn. I bring the example of the new grads, but they are definitely not the only victims who can fall into these traps. Many well-established physicians fall into this trap. In fact, a lot of my banker friends have always commented to me how doctors who make such a good income are always asking the bank for more money and leveraged all the way up to their line of credit. And so these high income earners, for some reason, are constantly chasing the next paycheck. And so for a lot of healthcare professionals and high income earners, many have very heavy load mortgages, lots of loans, and highly leveraged line of credit. Even though they are high income earners, they have very low net worth because their debt is so high and they constantly have to service the debt to continue on. And this makes it very difficult as these physicians are constantly on what I call the hamster treadmill, which forces them to work more and harder and longer hours. But yet, if they're not careful with the concept of keeping up with the Joneses and spending less than what they make, they will end up on this treadmill forever until retirement. And speaking of retirement, this is where I bring up the concept of opportunity cost and the concept of compounded interest. We have to understand that if we are spending the money and we have nothing left to invest or save, there is no money to invest or save. That is a very simple principle to understand. And where do we spend our money? Well, into things that are not necessarily needed and that are probably too material and most likely frivolous.
How's my financial health, Doc? Welcome to the Financial Literacy Podcast for healthcare professionals, where financial security and wealth topics are not a taboo.
And so therefore, the money that we spend that we don't have to invest or save is lost opportunity to make interest and make our money grow. Financially speaking, it is best for my money to make money than myself working hard making money. Now, I don't have issues with me working. I enjoy working. But financially speaking, it is more efficient for my money to make money than me trying to make money. So what is important is for us to build our army of dollar bills so that they can go to work for us. And the only way they can go to work for us is to make more money by building capital gains or by building interest, which can only be done if you invest the money or save the money. My personal preference is to save the money in something that provides guaranteed interest. I'm not just talking about GICs and savings account. I'm talking about various different products that allows us to save. All we have to do is look at the current climate during this COVID period. The markets are up and down, and in 1 week we lost 40% of the market's value. So investing into the market is really not saving. It's in fact gambling. So my personal preference is really to save money with a guaranteed interest. And there are many ways to do that. And now coming back to opportunity cost. If that money is spent into buying the next Mercedes-Benz or the next Jaguar or even the next Alfa Romeo or even that 4,000 square foot house, the money could be put to better use into saving and using that money to make money for future and even for immediate use if we needed to. So where would that money go? That money would be either saved or invested, again, depending on your preference. But what is important is the interest accumulated. And the interest is accumulated based on a compounded fashion. And so if I have $100 today and I'm making 10%, next year it'll be $110. And I keep it again for another year, then it's 10% on the 110, not 10% on 100. And as you can see, the compounded effect is exponential. But you also have to understand that if I spend that $100, I do not $100 to make that compounded interest. So everything is really about choice. Do I use that $100 to save or invest for the future and compound? Or do I use that $100 to buy really nice furniture? I'm not here to judge or criticize anybody, but I'm just here to say that these are the type of decisions that we don't necessarily think about because we don't really think about opportunity cost. The $100 cost to that nice sofa is not just $100. It's $100 plus the opportunity cost of not having invested for 10% year after year for the next 30, 40 years for retirement. So that sofa that you bought at $100 may be more expensive. Actually, not maybe. It is more expensive than the $100 that you paid. And please don't get me wrong. I'm not here to say that you shouldn't furnish your house, but I'm here to say that you should think about the opportunity cost with every purchase that you make or with every money or every dollar that you do not invest or save. Life is about choices, and you make the choices that you want to make that is best for you. But know that those choices impact your financial future in a very, very significant way. So if we understand compounded interest, we also need to understand that it only works if it's uninterrupted and also given time to actually grow. And so time is the factor here. The earlier you start investing and saving, the higher the return. So I've been given this example many times. If one were to invest $1 at 10% interest at the age of 20, by the time they reach 65, that $1 becomes $55. But if they invest that same dollar at 10% at the age of 30, at the age of 65, it becomes 40 times, $40. And if they do it at the age of 40, it becomes 20 times. And if they invest that dollar at 10% at the age of 50 and let it grow till 65, that dollar becomes $7. So you can see that time is the biggest factor here. The more time you allow that money to grow, the higher the ultimate outcome will be. The point is really not the 10%. People will argue, well, how do you get 10% year after year for 40 years? That's not the point. The point of the discussion is about giving your money time to grow, whether it's 7%, 5%, or whatever. But the factor remains, the more time you allow the money to sit and build interest, the higher the final amount will be, regardless of the interest rate. So if we put all this together and we were to pay ourselves first, automatically set money aside when our paycheck comes in to invest or save and do it automatically. And we do it right from the get-go as a brand new grad or as soon as possible, and not keeping up with the Joneses and not spending more than we make, and actually take that money and set it aside to let it grow. The earlier we do it, the better. This can only happen if we use our money wisely and spend it on items that are either frivolous or do not produce a income. This is where the book by Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, really discusses this concept of an asset that produces income versus assets that do not produce income. So with our hard-earned money, we either purchase assets that produces an income or use that money to invest or save to take advantage of compounded interest. And to take advantage of compounded interest, it has to be done as early as possible and uninterrupted. So in thinking about uninterrupted compounded interest, the question I have for the audience is, how many of you have invested in a TFSA, tax-free savings account? This is the best vehicle the government has given us to invest our money and to collect it at the end of the day tax-free. But this only is beneficial if we do it early. Very often I hear my colleagues saying they have not invested in their TFSA yet, and yet they have been in practice for 5, 10, even 15 years. If you don't start doing it early, when will you ever take advantage of the compounded interest? The argument they've always given me is, well, I don't have enough money at the end of the month. And that is because they've paid everybody first and paid themselves last. They've paid their huge mortgage, their very expensive car, their very nice furniture, and a very nice vacation. But don't get me wrong, I'm not against vacation. We all need to take vacation. But should we think about setting some money aside to invest for our future instead of paying for a very luxurious vacation that we could still get the same vacation, but maybe not as luxurious? The government allows individuals $6,000 per year to contribute in a TFSA. And so for most of us, healthcare professionals who have a high income, $6,000 is definitely not an issue. It is only an issue if we decided to pay everyone else first. So if I have one take-home point out of this podcast, is invest in your TFSA yesterday. If it's not yesterday, do it today. And if it's not today, do it as soon as possible. Do it automatically, save money aside, save $6,000 aside from your paycheck to do it now. And if you have children over the age of 18, they need to start now as well. Because as I mentioned, if you put a dollar invested at 10% rate of return at the age of 20, at the age of 65, it becomes 55 times. And that's only with $1. Imagine what that amount would be with $6,000 and contributing year after year. Use a compounded interest calculator and you can see for yourself how much $6,000 at 10% year after year for 45 years, what that looks like. You will be amazed. And so for your children, this is probably the best gift you can give to them. Instead of giving them a $6,000 to go on vacation, give them $6,000 to invest. And I guarantee you, they will thank you for it. And you will also pat yourself on the shoulder because you no longer have to worry about their financial future. And so trust me, I'm a father of two kids. I obviously worry about their health, their education, but also about their financial future. As we know, things are getting more and more difficult financially, and the next generation will have even tougher time to finding good quality work that pays well. And so financial security is definitely a concern for most parents. Okay, so finally, this is a good segue to talk about risk management. Because risk management is really about contingency planning and planning for the future. And our future is really our kids and their kids. That is typically the way we think about risk management. But I'm of the opinion that risk management is more than protecting the future. It's about also protecting the present. Many of us in the healthcare profession field don't do that, and don't do that very well. A lot of the arguments that my colleagues give me is, I don't need it, it's too expensive, it's not now, I don't have kids, I don't have parents, I don't have dependents. And so this is a false thinking. While I agree that some of the risk management tools are for the future and our state, there are a few risk tools that is for ourselves for the present. One of these tools is definitely disability insurance. Another one is critical illness insurance. Those are the two typical tools that we would use to manage risk for the present and for ourselves. Many think of life insurance as a tool for the future and estate planning. My opinion is obviously very different and to be discussed in a future podcast. There's a definite lack of risk management among practitioners in the healthcare field. In the business field, everything is about risk management. In healthcare, how do we see risk management? We see it as risk-benefit ratio when it comes to medical decision-making. But it is very strange and interesting that as professionals who deal with health, we don't apply that same thinking to our financial health. So what is the risk and benefit of a tool like disability, like critical illness, or even life insurance and whole life insurance? It is very funny that we don't see it with those same lenses. And yet we should, because all these tools have a reason and indication. They obviously come with benefit and risk and come with their sets of planning and strategy. Very often, healthcare professionals see these as someone trying to sell me something that I don't want now. And if we always look at it from those perspective and with that lens, we will never understand what the utility of those things are. Let me give you an analogy. When I have a patient who's diabetic and I want to start metformin, the question from the patient is always, well, why do I need it now? What's the utility? What are the side effects? And yet, I know they need it. And the reason they need it is that hopefully the metformin will reduce the A1C so that in the long term, we prevent micro and macrovascular diseases. Well, the same analogy applies to all these risk management tools. If I have risk that needs to be mitigated and there are tools out there, what are the tools specifically to do? What are they trying to manage? And what complications am I trying to mitigate? And we have to see it in those perspectives. And so someone telling me, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, I don't want to, or I don't need it, is just someone who's in denial of all the risks that they need to mitigate. And finally, when those complications hit, either a disability or a critical illness, it is very difficult to turn back time and say, oh, I should have thought about those insurances. The same way a patient will have a hard time justifying why they didn't take the metformin for 5 years to prevent the stroke. Healthcare professionals can very easily understand why it is important to take the metformin and reduce the A1C to prevent the stroke or the heart attack or the kidney disease. But healthcare professionals have a very difficult time to understand why they need the disability insurance, critical illness, or life insurance to mitigate the potential complications that can happen. And for all those listeners out there who still don't realize this, but death is 100%. So as healthcare professionals, we obviously understand this. But what does it mean from a risk management perspective? And yet we have a very hard time understanding this, even though we all know death is 100%. What we have a hard time comprehending is that insurances is not only for death. And that is why it is called life insurance and not death insurance. The different type of insurances are to cover ourselves for the present. And so all these are very good risk mitigation tools. Like I mentioned in my previous podcast, healthcare professionals behave like teenagers. We think we are invincible and we will live forever and nothing will happen. But reality tells us otherwise, that things do happen and life do throw us curveballs. The idea is how to manage these curveballs. A lack of understanding of risk management is a very common major mistake made by healthcare professionals. So to sum up, the five most common mistakes made by healthcare professionals are: 1, you pay yourself last. 2, you try to keep up with the Joneses and try very hard not to do FOMO, fear of missing out. 3, you spend more than what you earn and you allow life creep to rule your life. 4, not understanding opportunity cost and not understanding compounded interest. And 5, lack of understanding of risk management and contingency planning. So these 5 common mistakes are very bad and harmful to your financial security and financial well-being. It is these 5 common mistakes that keep us all on the hamster treadmill and chasing the next paycheck. I hope this was a very useful podcast for you and that you've taken some takeaway points. My first takeaway points is obviously get your TFSA done yesterday. And if it's not yesterday, do it today. So thank you very much for listening so far, and hope that you will correct these mistakes as soon as possible. I'm looking forward to meeting you guys next time. And if you have any questions, please email me at vukiet.tran, vukiet.tran, tran, at hpasolutions.ca. Thank you and enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
How is my financial health, Doc? Podcast is hosted by Dr. Vukiet Tran. Dr. Tran is a physician with a special interest in personal financial security and wealth education. Dr. Tran does not render or offer to render personalized investment or tax advice through this financial podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.